The local food movement in Iowa is gaining steam, and Iowa State University and the state legislature are working to put some muscle into the movement. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we're going to talk about the Local Food and Farm Initiative. It's a statewide program launched in August with the goal of boosting production, processing, distribution, marketing, and consumption of food grown here in Iowa. We'll talk about how the initiative is changing things for growers, sellers, and consumers, and we'll answer your questions about the plants in your life. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and while most of our gardens lay buried under a new blanket of snow, we're going to talk about local food. The Local Food and Farm Initiative was launched in August. It's a statewide program with the goal of boosting production, processing, distribution, marketing, and consumption of food grown here in the state. It's a partnership between the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship, Iowa State University Extension and Outreach, and ISU's College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Linda Nave is here with us today from ISU Extension. Richard Giron will join us in a few minutes. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Charity. How are you?
I'm great. How's the snow in Ames today?
It's there. It's light and fluffy. It's just normal Iowa winter.
That's good. Well, let's go back to the beginning of this initiative. Of course, the local foods movement in Iowa has been gaining steam for some time now, but this program is in response to a proposal drawn up by the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture. Tell me how that got started.
Well, that started through an Iowa legislature amendment in 2010, which mandated that the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture here at Iowa State University develop a local food and farm plan for the state of Iowa. And they did come up with their plan, their concepts, through and published it as called the Iowa Local Food and Farm Plan. They introduced it last year. And with that, it contained a lot of suggestions, recommendations, and the Iowa Farm and Food Plan contains 29 operational recommendations. And they also assigned a person for a one-year appointment as the Local Food and Farm State Coordinator, and that person is Dr. Craig Chase. He works through the Leopold Center at Iowa State, and he wasn't able to be with us this morning, but he might be on another time and talk more about the food plan, particularly since their preliminary report will be out about February 1st. And he mentioned that ISU will be hosting an Iowa Local Food Summit on April 3rd in Ames to move the work of the Iowa Local Food Plan forward and on to the next steps. So there's a lot of things going on, and we can talk about some of those individual things. We can talk about farmers markets, and what I'm interested in and involved in is the local foods and farm to school and local school garden projects that are going on around the state. You don't think of Iowa as being a school garden kind of state because our school and our production season doesn't always align. But there are a lot of activities going on and grant money and school gardens going in as a result of that this year.
Well, Linda, this is something you've been working on for a long time. And on the program in the past, we've talked about some of the initiatives that you've been involved in through value-added agriculture and ISU Extension. But how does having, a legislative mandate, although there's not a large budget behind this, there is, $75,000 allotted in the budget year, how does this change the efforts that you've been involved with?
Well, that's a real good question. It gives us a little more credibility in the area of regional and local foods. It gives us a lot of visibility in that area, and it strengthens many of the programs that are coming out in the areas of local foods. It identifies certain weaknesses and certain strengths and how we can merge those two things together for a stronger local food base here in Iowa.
Well, and of course, being at Iowa State University and being with the Extension, you already work with farmers all over the state. Does the fact that this is a mandated initiative and that there is involvement from the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. Does this expand your reach?
It does, and in many different ways. And one of the projects that I'm working on is in the area of a season extension with growers, fruit and vegetable growers, in high tunnels. And along with the Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food initiative out of the USDA and the NRCS program that helps support high tunnel construction, we've seen a lot of those going up around the state. So I am working with other ISU Extension staff and training farmers throughout the state. We just had a training in Cherokee this week. We have one coming up in Iowa Falls, all-day workshops on how to construct and manage a crop in a high tunnel for season extension, which increases profitability. So with this local food movement, we need producers to be able to accommodate this surge in interest in local foods and extend the season so we can provide more quality, more quantity of local foods in our communities.
Well, I think a lot of us who just dwell in the consumer realm, we see a lot of things promoting buying local and a lot of educational efforts showing us the benefits of buying local. But at this point, demand for local foods is still outstripping the actual supply, right?
That I can't answer as far as the demands. Our growers are trying to keep up with the demand. There is a lot more potential out there for institutions, and not just through retail farmers markets, but also through grocery stores, hospitals, nursing homes, restaurants. There's a huge opportunity out there, I should say, as much as demand.
One of the goals of this initiative is to not just expand food production, local food production, but improve processing. What are the problems that you've encountered when you talk to your producers as far as processing goes?
I don't work too much in the area of processing. That comes through the other departments on campus. I work more in the production areas.
Okay. With the... Like I mentioned, you know, this is a small budget outlay from the state legislature, $75,000. But this initiative, and I asked you earlier how it has changed what you've been doing, but what do you see as the greater impacts as you talk to other people who are involved in the project outside of your personal efforts?
Well, I think there's a lot more awareness. People are looking for local foods, and that is evident by the increased number of farmers markets in the state. Iowa per capita has some of the highest number of farmers markets per population. Right now, that fluctuates every year, of course, but we're over 225 farmers markets in Iowa, according to the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. So if you live anywhere in Iowa, there is likely to be a farmers market in your county or more than one farmers market in your county that you can go and buy fresh produce, meet the farmer who grows that produce for you. Iowans, they estimate, spend about $8 billion per year on food, but only 14% of that is produced in the state of Iowa. So we have a lot of potential there to increase our local foods. But the farmers market's one place where many consumers go to buy and meet their farmer.
Well, tell me a little bit about the initiatives that you've seen happening in schools. They kind of divide into two different categories. One is trying to get local food into schools and actually into school lunches. What kind of progress have you seen there?
I've seen a lot of progress. In 2007, the Iowa legislature passed the Farm to School legislation that established programs that would link elementary, secondary, public, and non-public schools with Iowa farmers. And that provides schools with fresh and minimally processed local foods and snacks, which then encourage children to develop healthy eating habits. Within that program, through the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship, they've had some wonderful programs such as A is for Apple, Rep Your Own Iowa Grown, and the infamous Iowa Farm to School chapters. They are now, in 2012, offering Garden is the Way to Grow, and they are offering schools, up to 20 schools in the state, some funding to help support putting in school gardens. I am working on a project with Janet Turing and 4-H Youth Development on the People's Garden Project through the USDA, in which we are working with Washington State, Arkansas, and Cornell universities on a $1 million grant to look at school gardens and their effect on healthy choices in their food. So we are putting in school gardens at 8 schools this year around the state, and along with a Wellmark Foundation grant and Healthy Communities grant, the People's Garden will, and those opportunities will put school gardens in 130 classrooms, 20 new school garden programs that'll touch nearly 3,000 youth around the state. So we're looking not only to provide local foods in their lunchroom, but also help them learn how to grow their local food. And research has shown by children growing their own food, they're more likely to make healthy food choices.
Actually eat it. So you mentioned earlier that, of course, a lot of people say, well, we can't have school gardens because the school year doesn't line up with the growing season. How do you get around that problem?
Well, we're looking at school, putting in school gardens and raised beds and situations where we can really stretch the season a little bit more again and have an early season crop and a later season crop, have volunteers and community leaders, extension, again, and master gardeners and others in their communities work on that school garden throughout the summer through school youth programs, park and recreations. There's a number of activities that are going to go on with that school garden throughout the summer. So we hope to have programming, more healthy initiatives for our in-school and out-of-school programs.
You mentioned 8 schools around the state. Can you tell us where they are?
I can tell you some of them. One of them just leaves me. Lowell Elementary in Waterloo, Webster City, Dunkerton, Hiawatha Elementary, an elementary in Sioux City, West Liberty, and Council Bluffs.
All right. And how will you be personally involved in that, Linda?
I'm working with their actual gardening project. I helped write the curriculum. Part of our Growing in the Garden curriculum will be used in this pilot study around the country. And so we're developing the curriculum. And then we're ordering the gardens and helping the teachers and administrators and school staff put in these gardens along with volunteers in their communities. So I'm working with the actual garden part, which is the fun part.
Excellent. Well, I hope that you'll talk more about this as the project proceeds. I'm talking with Linda Nave from Iowa State University Extension and Outreach. Richard Duran from ISU Extension will be joining us in just a moment. And you are welcome to join our conversation as well. We've been talking about the local food and farm initiative. We've been talking about school gardens, and you're welcome to join that part of the conversation. Of course, we'll also answer your questions about the things that you're planning to grow when the snow melts, or your house plants, whatever plants are in your life. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me are Linda Nave and Richard Duran from Iowa State University Extension. Welcome, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And we've been talking about the Local Food and Farm Initiative, a statewide effort that was launched in August. We've also been talking about new efforts to have gardens at schools. If you want to ask any questions about that, give us a call at 866-780-9100. If you have experiences with a school garden, we'd love to hear your stories as well. 866-780-9100. And of course, if you have any questions about the plants in your life, if you're planning that spring garden, or if you have a house plant that's ailing, give us a call, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Linda, you talked about trying to stretch the season a little bit with these school gardens with raised beds. Are you thinking about high tunnels for schools as well?
You know, we are, actually. We're looking at, we're writing some grant materials so that we can work on pilot programs with schools, selected schools around the state, to put up high tunnels within their vocational agriculture and FFA programs. What this will do will educate our future growers to grow more local foods, and will help them, again, with their farm-to-school program, maybe even grow foods for their own schools. So, yeah, we are looking at high tunnels for High school, not so much elementary programs.
When you think about high tunnels and stretching the season, how early can you start to grow something in the season if you have a high tunnel?
Some growers are claiming that they can produce a crop or have something, I should say, have something growing in their high tunnel year-round. But realistically, we are saying anywhere between 7 and 9 months we can have something growing and producing for sale.
So you're thinking March you could really
yes,
have something growing.
We can. Many high tunnel producers will be planting lettuce, beets, the really early season stuff, as early as March. With the high tunnel, we can change the hardiness zone within that environment down one hardiness zone. For example, if we are 4A, we can, in a high tunnel, we are producing as if we are in 5A. So it really extends the season, really a hardiness zone. We can plant tomatoes in central Iowa in a high tunnel approximately April 15th, in which we will have our production in mid-June rather than July. So, and by producing tomatoes, let's say for a mid-June market, we can command, growers can command a higher retail value at farmers markets and other institutional accounts.
And for people who aren't familiar with high tunnels, they're these things that you're beginning to see a whole lot more often in the landscape. But historically, a lot of them have been called hoop houses. But what distinguishes a high tunnel?
The high tunnel and a hoop house are very similar. Similar sort of construction. But I define a high tunnel as a structure, a greenhouse-like structure in which we grow plants, but it's a very simple structure. The plants are grown right in the soil rather than in beds or on benches. And they're passively heated, and they're ventilated just by opening the ends and the sides. It's covered with a clear, about 6 mil, UV-resistant polyethylene plastic. The sides roll up and the ends can roll up or be designed however works for the grower. Now, the hoop house is more of a structure that's either got a colored, a white, or more a green or any colored plastic covering. It's used more for producing livestock or livestock containment and or for storing equipment or silage or hay or whatever else on the farm rather than growing something in.
Okay, so it looks very similar, although the purpose is different.
They look very similar. The hoop houses tend to be a little taller and a much larger structure. Our high tunnels tend to be the largest you usually see here in Iowa is a 30-foot to 35-foot diameter by 96-foot long, whereas hoop, and they get to be 14 feet tall, where hoop houses can be much larger than that.
All right. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 866-780-9100, tweet us at IPR Talk, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Fred is on the line from Grinnell. Hi, Fred.
Say, when's your next hoop house or high tunnel workshop over in Iowa County, Benton County, in this area? You gonna have anything over this way?
We currently don't have anything scheduled in that area. We have just
Marshalltown?
We had one in Marshalltown a couple years ago. Our closest one, if you're in that area, would be in Iowa Falls, and that will be with the community college there on February 4th.
The question I have is, I've done the market in Coralville for several years, and I quit, and I went back in 2010, and then there's another one in Powashi County that are both on life supports. There's very little customer flow coming through, and some of the vendors have given it up. I wonder if there's anybody from your neck of the woods that would have some pertinent information for those people that are willing to open their eyes and say, well, maybe we should try this instead of letting it continue to go down and down and down.
Yes, there are a number of regional food systems working groups around the state, and these regional food working groups are 16 groups around the state, and over in your area would be perhaps in Marshall County areas, Harvest from the Heart. It's led by Prairie Rivers RC&D and the National Center for Appropriate Technology. And they do have a website, so it's Harvest from the Heart, Regional Food Working Systems Group, and that is a group of community leaders, organizations, non-government organizations that work together and work with farmers and consumers to help meet the health, social, economic, and environmental needs of your communities. So these regional food working groups around the state are really working in the area of local food availability and awareness in your communities. So the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State initiated these groups, convened them in 2003, and they've been growing ever since.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Fred, and good luck to you. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 866-780-9100. Disa, did I say that right?
Yes, you did. Right. Thank you.
Disa's on the line from Cedar Falls. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I have a question about the earlier point about getting local food into schools.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there have been some successful programs doing that in this state and one here in Cedar Falls as well. And then I also know that there have been other initiatives that have sputtered or have faced a lot of challenges. And I don't really see an argument against getting local foods into schools, but there are clearly some school districts who are opposed to it. And I was wondering if we could talk about sort of the psychology behind that opposition and some strategies to, or some arguments to convince that side to work on the initiative a little bit more.
I haven't heard much in the area of opposition. There are some limitations, however, as we consider our school year and our production season. There are certain things, and it has to do with pricing as well. The schools typically are on a very tight budget when it comes to their food service, and so they've tried to find inexpensive food to support their program, but yet at the same time they want to provide healthy foods. So there is the toss up there, and growers have a minimum price they can sell their product for and still make a decent living. So there are some of the concerns: meeting the prices. And, of course, the quantities that are needed in the schools. It may take more than one grower. So there's a little bit of education there among the buyers for the food service and the growers, and maybe some need for aggregation. Northeast Iowa is doing this extremely well, and they've got a great program going up there at the Farm to School and the Northeast Iowa Food and Fitness. They're sort of our poster child.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your call, Disa, and I hope that answers your question. And speaking of Northeast Iowa Food and Fitness, Rachel's on the line from Toledo. Hi, Rachel.
Hi. I am so surprised at that, although you are referencing us. But, I've been working with the Food and Fitness Initiative for 2 years, and we've worked, with 12 to 14 school districts and have started school gardens, but we also realized that we need to educate food service, so we do workshops and trainings to teach them, and we also want it to be in the classroom, so we're working with teachers to do workshops and train them how to integrate food education into everyday curriculum.
That is great. Okay,
yeah,
go on.
Yeah. But I really realized that, the biggest hurdle is gaining the support from state and the nation about putting more money and funds into it and making a real commitment. And I see some of the bigger agricultural companies who have more effect with the USDA, I don't know if they want to see the changes as much as, everyone else. So I just want to know if you know of any legislation coming up that might be putting more money for it or where that status is.
There's a lot of awareness, and we are very fortunate with former Governor Vilsack, now as Secretary of Agriculture out in D.C. He initiated the Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food program, and with that we have the People's Garden Project, which Iowa State is involved in, as I mentioned earlier, and there are a lot of garden-related projects through that initiative. So we are fortunate there. We've seen a real spike in interest and financial support for these type of programs. There are a number of nonprofit organizations that have foundations, and we are working with the Wellmark Foundation on school garden project, but there are a number of private business foundations that are supporting school gardens and these efforts. We talk about curriculum in the classroom. Iowa State University Extension 4-H has the Growing in the Garden curriculum, which is a pre-K through 3 curriculum that's been revised a couple times now, and a new one coming out. Local foods, healthy living and lifestyle, growing in the garden curriculum, which should be out later this summer, which focuses on standard and benchmarks, meeting the national standards for curriculum, but yet integrating local foods and growing in the garden into the classroom curriculum.
Well, and before we let you go, Rachel, tell us a little bit about what you do with Northeast Iowa Food and Fitness.
Yeah, well, I'm actually currently have stepped away from my job, but I the first year I started our farm to school program, and so I worked with the whole community and tried to formulate what should it look like and what's most important, and that's how we came about having all these different components. And so yeah, I would help run food service workshops. I'd teach different lessons with we'd actually try to teach teachers like they were the students and mm-hmm. give them the experience of, you know, different examples to use food education. But yeah, it's been a really great experience for me, and I think the education is the biggest thing. The more people understand about what good food is, you know, the more they will support it. So
give us a tip, Rachel, for people who are, of course, trying to always get their children to eat more healthy foods. Do you have a good tip for parents to try to introduce different vegetables to their children?
Yeah, I am totally convinced that every child will like vegetables. It's all about how you make it. I mean, none of us necessarily like a can of green beans, but if you get something fresh, I like to just put a story behind it or make something interesting. Maybe you can call it, you know, a grain tree, the broccoli, or you can, you know, have them do art with it, or as long as you just put some other activity or story with it. Or the best thing is if they grow it themselves, you know, they're going to eat it because it's something they're proud of.
All right.
So.
Thank you, Rachel, for calling in. I really appreciate your input here.
Thanks a lot for your call, Rachel. If you want to join our conversation, you can call us at 866-780-9100, tweet us at IPR Talk, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And earlier, we were talking about high tunnels, and so we've put up a picture of a high tunnel on our Facebook page. So if you're curious awesome. About what one looks like, you can see now at Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. Michael's on the line from Des Moines. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I'm a restaurant owner in Des Moines, and I'm just curious. We've been buying from different producers for many, many years, and kind of a natural progression for us seems to be to start to grow more of our own produce. And we had really good success with herbs last year, but now we're talking about wanting to expand, you know, significantly enough that we think we need some partnership with, if it was a school or an association or some gardening group. I wonder if you had any suggestions of where we would go to, I guess, get a couple field hands who could help us produce and be compensated to produce produce for our restaurant.
I would think probably the best thing to do would be to work with an established grower right now so that grower could maybe increase his production to supply your restaurant. I think that would probably be your best bet rather than, unless there's someone out there who wants to dedicate their production system to your restaurant. But there are a lot of growers out there that are looking for more of the institutional market. And there's a conference coming up soon, and that it's next weekend, actually, the 27th and 28th of January is the Iowa Fruit and Vegetable Growers Conference. That might be somewhere to network with some potential growers or to put your idea out there. We will be having roundtable discussions one afternoon, actually two times during the conference, that we'll be talking about various topics on an informal level. For more information about the conference, you can call the Value-Added Ag Extension Value-Added Ag at Iowa State University, or you can go online and just Google Iowa Fruit and Vegetable Growers Association.
Well, and also, Linda, I know you have some online tools for people who want to connect with local growers. How can he look around and find more?
We do. We have a wonderful program. It's called Iowa Market Maker, iowamarketmaker.org, all one word. And what that is, it's an online tool in which buyers and sellers can connect. You can go online, register for free your restaurant. You can connect with farmers who have registered. You can look for specific attributes about that crop that you want. Do you want all organic? Do you want organic asparagus? Do you want a certain attribute within the meat market that you're looking for? So anything in the area of foods, you can find a producer in Iowa that is registered on Market Maker. And we've had a great response with that. It's a great way to connect, and it even offers producers an opportunity among each other to buy and sell product and buy and sell equipment.
All right, we're talking about local foods today on Horticulture Day. And, of course, you can ask any questions you like. We're giving Richard Duran a free ride today, but you can ask him questions as well. I'm talking with Linda Nave and Richard Duran from Iowa State University Extension. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and it's Horticulture Day today. We've been spending most of the hour, in fact, all of the hour so far, talking about local foods. We've been talking about the Local Food and Farm Initiative that was launched in August, a statewide program. We've also been talking about new efforts to get local food into schools, and you're welcome to join our conversation. If you have questions or comments about local food, you can call us at 866-780-9100. If you're planning your spring garden or have questions about some of the plants in your life, you can also call us 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're giving Richard Duran a break. You doing okay there, Richard, today?
I'm fine. I'm playing with my headphone cord.
All right. And listening intently to
yes.
Linda, of course. So, but you can ask questions for Linda or Richard. Again, the number, 866-780-9100. Roger is on the line in Lisbon. Hi, Roger.
Good morning.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
I didn't hear the start of the show, but I haven't heard any discussion of CSAs, and we've been a member of the Abbey Hills CSA with Laura Krause and Hunk Fernan for, I don't know, over a dozen years, and it's a great way for us to stay connected. My wife and I both have family farm backgrounds, but don't live in the farm, and it's a great way. We pay a membership and then pick up vegetables every week all summer long and into early fall, and I'm wondering if there's any support from the state for getting those started. I know Laura does supply some food to Lincoln Cafe, probably the best restaurant in the state, and that connects with some of the other comments you had. It seems like a real good way to have local farmers produce and be sure they have a market.
Thank you for bringing that up. That is definitely another way in which the local foods can get to the consumer, direct from the farm to the consumer. CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture. It started maybe, I don't know, 20 years ago, and it has really caught on around the country. They estimate there are over 2,000 CSAs around the country. It could be more than that at this point. They seem to be cropping up, no pun intended, around the state. What they do, it's the farmer sells shares to individuals of their farm. Let's say, for example, Laura over in Abbey Hills in Mount Vernon, just talked to her last weekend, as a matter of fact, at the PFI conference. She spoke on CSAs over there and gave a great presentation on how she operates her CSA from a producer standpoint. So what the CSA offers is a share of the farm. You may have 50, a grower may have 70 to 200 members of their CSA, in which they purchase ahead of time a share of that farm. Along with the vegetables, they purchase they invest in the farm as a risk. So if the farm does real well, their portion of the share is quite high. But if there is a crop failure or something, they also have a problem with the amount of fruits and vegetables that they get because they own a portion of that share. They're helping out that farmer. They pay typically in advance to help the farmer get through the planting season, the purchase of the seed, the fertilizer, and other things that they need to get that farm going. And then they either pick their crop, pick their boxes up and their produce up at the farm, or it could be at a drop-off point such as the farmer's market, or it could be delivered to the home, and it varies. So it's sort of like bringing the farmer's market to the consumer directly rather than the consumer having to go through the farmer's market at and purchase their food.
Well, and you mentioned the PFI conference. For people who aren't familiar, that's the Practical Farmers of Iowa.
Yes, that is. Practical Farmers of Iowa do a lot, and they have a lot of good information on CSAs around the state, and many of the growers do work through PFI as well. It's a great partner with Iowa State.
On the subject of CSAs, we got a comment on our Facebook page from Christine. She says they love their CSA One Step at a Time gardens and also love to drive to Nevada to pick blueberries and raspberries. But I'm not sure if that's still buying local since I live in Mason City, but I enjoy it anyway. What is the definition of buying local?
That is a very good question. That is the million-dollar question. And actually, we were just talking about that yesterday in a small group discussion. What is local food? Local is in the mind of the consumer, and it's in the mind of the vendor. Some people associate local foods within their own communities, meaning their own counties, perhaps. Others have the boundary as to the state boundaries. Now, if we look at institutions and some grocery markets and large vendors, they may view local foods as their distribution area, maybe a 5 to an 8 state distribution area. I believe the USDA defines local foods as a 300-mile away from your home, which is quite a ways. So I guess it all depends. There's no legal definition of what local represents. I guess it's all in your mind. You live in Mason City and you go to the berry patch in Nevada and pick blueberries. I would consider personally that is local.
Right.
And you pick is another local option. There you pick, meaning farms that allow you to pick your own produce around the state. There's you pick strawberries, you pick orchards. There are some you pick vegetables as well. So not too many, but most of them are you pick fruit operations. And one that often comes to mind because they are wonderful growers and they're around the state. They have a large you pick for fruits right there in Nevada. It's the Berry Patch Farm.
Well, and speaking of buying local, there is a little bit of controversy sometimes at farmers markets about some of the producers who, so they can have something to sell earlier in the season, will bring in tomatoes from Missouri or Kentucky or something like that. There are lots of questions about local in that way.
Again, it goes back to what you, the consumer, defines as local. The farmer's market brings that to you, and it could be local in the definition of the USDA 300-mile radius of your site. However, again, it's you, the consumer, that can make that choice if it's local or not. Some farmer's market have actual restrictions on who can where the produce can come from to be vended at that farmer's market. They do have some mileage restrictions as to where that produce comes from and or who actually grows it. Some farmers markets are so strict that you can only sell what you grow.
If you'd like to join our conversation, you can give us a call at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. If you'd like to get in on the conversation about local foods, you can do that. If you have questions about the plants in your life, give us a call, 866-780-9100. And Richard, Barbara from Ames has a question for you. Hi,
good.
Barbara.
Is that me?
Yes, that's you.
Oh, okay. Hi. I'm wondering, I get an email, a mailing from someone, a person calling herself the Iowa Gardener. And about a week and a half ago, she sent out a letter telling people that because there hadn't been much snow, and I know it's snowing today, but still we have had hardly any snow this season, we should be watering our plants that have been in the ground for less than 3 years. Because there was a concern about drought this summer, and I want to know if is that a possibility? I mean, do you know anything about it?
Well, I would agree partially with that. In many areas of Iowa, it's fairly dry. And about 2 weeks ago, the ground was not frozen. And so I would have said if you had planted something recently, like a tree or shrub, and the ground's not frozen, and the ground is fairly dry, then I would have recommended watering those plants because you have the opportunity and it might be beneficial. Right at this point, we've had some colder weather. We've had some snow cover. Obviously, at this point, it's not practical. It's not feasible. But if we have another warm spell, let's say in February, where we have some mild weather, the ground's not frozen, the ground appears to be getting dry, then I would go ahead and water recently planted trees and shrubs. Yes, I would.
Okay, but right now, today is not a great day
to
water.
No, not a good day to be watering.
All right, and of course, there is still a danger of drought. We haven't resolved that possibility at this point.
Right. We had a very dry summer and fall across most of Iowa. And for that reason, those plants, when it's warmer, especially the evergreens, they will lose a lot of moisture on those warm, sunny winter days. And if you have the opportunity to go ahead and water those plants, they have a chance to absorb some water to replace what they're losing. So, especially with the evergreens, if you planted those recently in the last 2 or 3 years, the ground is not frozen, it's dry, go ahead and water.
All right, Barbara, thanks so much for your question. And we'll go now to Suzanne in Grinnell. If you want to join our conversation, give us a call at 866-780-9100. Hi, Suzanne.
Oh, hi, yes, thanks. My husband didn't have the phone number, and I did, so I called in, but he said there was somebody in Des Moines who was running a restaurant who was looking to source food or grow their own, and Practical Farmers of Iowa will be a great resource for that couple or that entrepreneur to either match up with somebody growing or who wants to grow, or a new farmer, or a beginning farmer, or existing farmer, or give them the resources to do the farming themselves. So we just wanted to put that out there, that Practical Farmers of Iowa is a great resource.
All right, Suzanne, thanks a lot. And it sounds like there are a lot of different ways to network.
There are. And like I say, if they want online resource, Market Maker Iowa is an excellent one, at least to get you started in the right direction.
Well, and, you know, on the subject of networking, it sounds like there's a desire for local food, both on the buying side and on the producing side. It sounds like networking is really where we need to see a lot of growth right now.
Yes, it is. And like I say, the regional food systems working groups, those 16 groups around the state, are really working to build awareness, community policy, and availability.
If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 866-780-9100. We still have time for a couple more callers, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. John's on the line now from Dubuque. Hi, John.
Hello. How are you, Melody? Thanks for putting me on. I have a quick comment. First of all, I'm the executive director of the Driftless Area Initiative, which is a four-state environmental group located along the Mississippi River. So in Iowa, we're along the eastern border, starting at Minnesota, so northeast Iowa down through Dubuque, almost to Clinton, and then we're in Illinois, Minnesota, and Wisconsin as well. Two comments. One is I wanted to give my input on a comment that was made earlier about who's opposing this. One of the issues that has to be solved is the issue of food safety. So I think, and I know northeast Iowa is working very hard on this, but anybody that's interested in doing this has to be sure that they've got that nailed down, because all we need is one or two incidents to come up, and it could really cripple this whole movement. So there needs to be a lot of thought given to that. And then secondly, I wanted to just mention that Driftless Area Initiative just recently started a committee on agricultural Sustainable Agriculture and Local Foods. It's chaired by Michelle Miller from the University of Wisconsin Systems for Integrated Agriculture. And so if anybody, especially in Northeast Iowa, is interested in getting involved in that, they can contact me. They can go to our website, driftlessareainitiative.org, and find my contact information, and we can get them involved in that committee. So we think this is a great thing. And one last comment is that it's the chicken and the egg, as everyone said. It's so important to provide people who are willing to purchase these products, because farmers can't produce if there's no market for them. And I just want to put another comment in for Teresa Opheim and Practical Farmers of Iowa. They're doing a great job. So
thanks a lot for your call, John, and for letting us know about that. And also drives home the point, a caveat to the point that you were making earlier, Linda, about the definition of local. Also, there are lots of different kinds of producers that are involved in this movement. I mean, when we're talking about the Driftless Area Initiative, you know, there are organic farmers, there are non-organic farmers. The number of different kinds of producers that's broad.
That is broad. There are a lot of attributes, and because I guess consumers have their own needs and their own demands, and the producers can meet those based on how they grow their crops. So you can find a farmer that'll grow the type of crops you want. I almost guarantee that you will.
Joel is on the line from Iowa City with a question. Hi, Joel.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
I have about 30 Norwegian pines on the north side, and they're getting older. They're about 40 feet tall, and they're losing their limbs at the bottom. And so I'd like to plant something to provide a barrier in there where they're losing their limbs. And I just wondered if you have a recommendation on what I could plant there to kind of screen that road.
Okay. How high have they lost their branches at this point?
Oh, they're just starting to. So it's you can start seeing light through there, but not too much because they got two rows of them.
Okay. Boy.
I don't need to have plant right on them. I got some room I could plant in front of them or behind
okay.
them.
One thought might be, for example, if you're looking for a shrub, maybe some arrowwood viburnums. They're a shrub. They typically grow about 8 foot tall, 8 foot wide. They will grow in part shade to full sun, so they'll take either. They're native to Iowa. They're a fairly easy to grow shrub. They're fairly attractive. They have creamy white flowers in the spring. They have berry-like fruit that turn dark blue in August. They're widely sold, widely grown in the landscape. So I might consider possibly arrowwood viburnum, possibly gray dogwood that will grow in part shade also. That grows about maybe 10 to 12 foot tall, 10 to 12 feet wide. That would be another possibility.
Oh, that sounds good. That sounds good. Yeah, I use that road to kind of screen against the dust and stuff, and it's always protected the area, but...
Well, good luck with that, Joel.
Yeah, that's good. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot. And Richard Duran, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Linda Nave, thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm sure that local foods is a subject we will be revisiting again in the near future. Linda Nave and Richard Duran from Iowa State University Extension. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Emily Woodbury. Technical support from Jason Burns in Ames. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. On Monday, I'll be talking with Sarah Levine about her new novel, Treasure Island.